have the time. I'll do whatever.
Mm-hmm.
What time? Time is money. That's a good one. Okay, that has a word in it. It was short. What about spending your time wisely? Well, killing time. Did somebody already say that? Killing time? What about someone saying putting time in a bottle? If I could put time in a bottle? All kinds of phrases that we can think of with regard to time. Which ones of those are possible, though? Can you buy time? Can you kill time? In a sense, I guess you can. Can you put time in a bottle? Can you slow down time? Can you save time? You can't even save time. Think about it. Time goes along, steady pace. It just keeps ticking. Nothing you can do about it. You spend time the way it comes along. You can't stretch it out. You can't shorten it. Even though sometimes it seems like time flies fast, the older you get. There's some quotes that I found. The first one is, "Do not squander time, for that is the stuff life is made of." Ben Franklin said that. And I always thought, couldn't we find a better word than stuff? You know? But it's true, isn't it? "Do not squander time, for that is the stuff that life is made of." And William Penn said, "Time is what we want most, but what we use worst." I think that's true. William Shakespeare said, "Make use of time, let not advantage slip." Then Michael Altshuler, don't know who he is, but he said, "The bad news is time flies. The good news is you're the pilot." And then Jean de la Bruyere said, "Those who make the worst use of their time are the first to complain of its shortness." And I think that's true, too. Those who make the worst use of their time are the first to complain of its shortness. And that sometimes I complain how short time is, so I may not use my time too wisely. Well, what does the Bible say about time? Turn and look at Psalm 90. God is not restricted by time. In verses 1 through 4, it says, "Lord, you have been our dwelling place in all generations. Before the mountains were brought forth, or ever you had formed the earth and the world, from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. You return man to dust and say, 'Return, O children of man, for 1,000 years in your sight are but as yesterday, when it is past, or as a watch in the night.'" And then look down at verse 10. "The years of our life are 70, or even by reason of strength, 80. Yet their span is but toil and trouble. They are soon gone, and we fly away. So teach us to number our days, that we may get a heart of wisdom." Think about that phrase, "teach us to number our days." It was the time when, it was back in 1998, John went to Israel. He was blessed to go to Israel for almost a month, and the boys were little. Jordan was 8, and Michael was 6, and Michael was a baby. And we had a calendar, and they were so upset about him being gone, but we marked off each day. And in some ways, I think, is that really numbering our days? But it was, they were counting the days until he was gone, until he was back. And so they were numbering those days. And another way that we number our days is not forgetting certain days, by remembering things that are special to us, or things that are very important to us, birthdays, anniversaries of someone's death, things like that are important to us. We number those days. We mark them in our minds, and in many ways we're grateful for these days. James 4:14, this is another passage that talks about time, says, "You do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes." Just think about when you're boiling water and you see the mist that comes up from the water, and how just for a couple of inches you see it and then it disappears. And that's our life before God. Then Ephesians 5:15-16 says, "Look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise but as wise, making the best use of time, because the days are evil." And John would be really proud of me. I'm going to give y'all a football lesson. "Look carefully how you walk." I read this somewhere. I thought it was great. Have you ever noticed, and I didn't really know this until recently, fairly recently, that the running backs stand behind, you know, they're behind the line, and they wait for the linemen to make a hole for them to run through. And sometimes they run right after them. So there was a description of Emmitt Smith, one of the old Dallas Cowboys, and how he was one of the best at looking for holes in the line. He would wait. He would, and I remember watching him like this. He would wait and see the line in front of him that would make a hole for him, and he would run behind them, and he was watching his steps, being careful which way he ran, looking ahead to see where he was able to cut through and, you know, run down the field and make a touchdown. So there's your football lesson for the day. And I just thought that was interesting because he was careful in the way that he ran. And how many here tend to lose track of time? Anybody here besides me? You know, I was thinking just this morning, sometimes we might hit the snooze button. I hate the snooze button. I don't use it. John uses it, and I really don't like it when he uses it, and I don't have to get up, but that's for another time. But you might, you know, hit the snooze button, so there's 5 minutes that you've lost all of a sudden. And then you go sit down to the computer because you just kind of have to wake up while you have your coffee in hand. And so for 5 minutes too long, you're checking your email maybe. And then you get to take your shower and you're drying your hair and your hair is uncooperative and it takes 5 more minutes than you wanted it to. And then if you're like me, you run out to the car and then you come back inside because you've forgotten your phone. And you get back to the car and you get halfway down the driveway and then you realize you've forgotten your lunch and you run back, drive back to the house. And so, you know, really by the time you get where you're going, you've already lost 30 minutes. Yeah, and you're exhausted at the same time too. And that's kind of the story of my life sometimes. And that's not even with kids. So I know those of you with small children or even big children, you add more people into the mix. And sometimes we just lose track of time. Sometimes it feels like our enemy. Time sometimes feels like our enemy. There's not enough hours in the day. Did you know it's 231 days until Christmas? And here's something interesting, too. I've never thought about this. And I can't, obviously can't prove it. I can't say that I know this. But when I thought about it, I could not find any passage or any instance where Jesus was hurrying. He did not live life in a hurry. And think about it. He only had 3 years or so to do what he was sent to do. And he was sent to do the most important job ever. But he is not portrayed as running from place to place. Now, I don't know that. I just think it's interesting when you look in Scripture, you don't see him running from place to place. He considered the flowers and the birds in Matthew 6, and he had time for children, which is a beautiful picture in Matthew 18 and 19. Matthew 18, 1 says, in the context of someone asking him who is the greatest in the kingdom, says, and calling a child to him, he put him in the midst of them. And you can just picture Jesus with these children around him and his kindness towards them. And then in Matthew 19, 13, it says that the children were brought to him that he might lay his hands on them and bless them. And the disciples rebuked those people that brought the children to him. But what did he say? Said, let the children come to me. He had time for children. He had time for a wedding feast. And that's something that a whole lot of men don't have time for, do they? They don't want to have time for a wedding feast. But Jesus had time for that in John 2. And then there's so many places where you see that he walked and sat by the sea. And, you know, when you look at those, immediately it seems like he's surrounded by people. So I don't imagine that it was a very relaxing time for him, but he walked and sat by the sea in Matthew 13 and 15 and other places. And then in Matthew 14, he took time to pray alone. So Jesus had a limited amount of time to do the most important job in the history of the world, but he took time to do the important things and took time to relax his mind, I think. It just seems that he's portrayed that way. Then in John 11, in the story of when Lazarus died, and I think there was another purpose why he did not hurry to get there, but he delayed a couple of days before he went on to see him. He did not hurry there even. I wonder what he would think today about all of our hustle and bustle. I wonder what he would think about our schedules and all the things that we try to cram into one day. I wonder what he would think about that. So how can we manage our time better? Stephen Covey wrote the book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I'm sure you all have heard of it. He said, time management is a misleading concept. No matter what you do, time keeps moving forward at the same rate. The challenge is not to manage time, but to manage ourselves. Isn't that true? Because there's not anything you can do to add time, but we can manage ourselves. So how can we do this? The first thing that we need to do is to prioritize. Maybe you've all heard the story of the teacher before class that had a large jar and then several large rocks and then a jar full of pebbles and then a jar full of sand, and then a glass full of water. And he told his students to fill up the jar. So they took the jar of pebbles and they poured it into the big jar. And then they poured the sand in. And then they started trying to fit in the big rocks. But it wouldn't all fit. And so they told the teacher, it's full. We can't fit anything else in. He said, well, you're not doing it right. Let's start over. So he took everything out and had all of it set apart again. And what he did was he took the big rocks and put them in the jar first. And then after that, he picked up the jar full of pebbles and he poured it in on top of the big rocks. And they settled around the cracks of the big rocks. And then he took the jar of sand and poured it in. And those settled in around the little tiny crevices of the smaller rocks. And then he poured the water in with no problem at all. Everything fit. So what's the moral of the story? I'm going to let y'all tell me what's the moral of the story. Put the big rocks in first. Unless you put the big rocks in first, it will not all fit. So now our problem is to figure out what the big rocks are. And I think for a lot of us, a lot of people in the world, maybe God is one of the rocks. One of the big rocks even. For some people, he's not one of the big rocks. He's not at any of it at all. But I don't think that God is one of the big rocks. I think that in this analogy, God needs to be the jar that we fit everything else into. He needs to be our priority, our absolute top priority. This quote, I thought, was very revealing. Where you invest your time reveals what is important to you. Isn't that true? Where you invest your time reveals what is important to you. So think about for a minute. Think about where you spend your time. Is that true of you? That's true of me, I think. And even our jobs, though they're necessary, they can take over our lives and they can become the jar and we try to fit everything else into it. And maybe not so much in a group of these women here, but I believe that there's so many women that their jobs take over their lives, and men as well. Of course, we have to consider our time on the job when we're thinking about how we spend our time. But just for the sake of making our priorities clear, let's set aside our jobs for the moment. And just think for a minute about how you spend your time. Where do you spend your time? Just give me a few words where we spend our time. They don't have to be heavy. I'm not asking for deep thoughts here, but where do you spend your time? What do you find yourself spending your time on?
Housework.
Kids, housework, school, sports,
Facebook.
Housework, Facebook. Let's say computer.
Let's
just be honest, right? Mm-hmm.
People, worship.
And people in worship. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, when you consider how you spend your time, does that reveal something about you? There's things we can't help. Driving. I spend a lot of time driving. Spend a lot of time at the grocery store. Not as much as I used to, but I spend a lot of time there. But if you subtract, let's see, there's 168 hours in a week. If you have a full-time job out in the workplace, subtract 40 hours for that. And then say you get 7 hours of sleep tonight, which is probably a joke for some of you, then subtract another 49 hours. And so you end up with 79 hours per week. So how do we spend that? And I think if we look and examine where we spend that time, it reveals a lot about ourselves. Do we spend time on extracurriculars? Well, extracurriculars are good. Whether it's a sport or, you know, five sports for some families when you got lots of kids and just having one in a different sport that you meet yourself coming and going. So if we spend time in extracurriculars, it's frustrating to see sometimes those who choose sports and practices and even school over things that are so much more important. And I have a hard time in my attitude towards them because to me it's so obvious where our priorities need to lie. There's so many, I think, that would not think twice about making sure that their kids got their schoolwork done, but when it comes to making sure that they are at worship when they need to be at worship, they're willing to miss for other things. It's frustrating to me because I see that's not a good choice. And I just, that sounds judgmental, but I think most of you here would understand what I'm saying, that God is our top priority. Norman yesterday, what he said, that he never saw his dad put the Lord second. I never saw my parents put the Lord second. Just think about that. Have you ever seen your parents put the Lord second? Some of you didn't maybe grow up in a Christian home, but would you like for your children to say that about you, that they never saw you put the Lord second? Sometimes it's our choices and our priorities that lead to problems later. Then Matthew 16:26 says, "What will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul?" What if you put your child there? What will a man profit if he gains the whole world and forfeits the soul of his child? Or what shall a man give in return for the soul of his child? We need to think seriously about that. I wonder too, like Des was saying, which book sees more use by you? The Lord's book or Facebook? Do we spend time, another thing we spend time on, accumulating money? And in our quest and our search for money, which is not a bad thing, we have to be able to take care of our families. But sometimes we just want more and more and more security. We want to have things. We may sometimes become materialistic in our quest for money. But is our search for money more pressing than our relationship with God? Matthew 6:19, 20, and 33. "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal." Then down in verse 33, "Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you." I've seen so many times when priorities are right, when we put the big rocks in first, God will take care of those necessary things in life. We might not have all of the things that we want, but God's going to take care of us when we take care of the priorities that he puts in our lives. What about our relationships? Do we spend time with our families and those that we're trying to have relationships with? I think this should be one of the big blocks, the high priority for us. You know, we have a limited amount of time to build these relationships. In life, it really is a vapor. I know with little children, I remember the days feeling long from the time that you get up when they're little bitty. Some of you mothers agree with that, that the days kind of seem long sometimes. But then when you look back on them, doesn't it seem like they went so fast? And I think it's cliche. I think that some who are going through it probably get sick and tired of hearing some of us or anyone say, "Oh, treasure each moment. You know, it's going to go so fast." I think probably, I know I've got tired of hearing it, and it's hard to treasure poop all over the floor and, you know, things like that. It's hard to treasure times like that. But it really is true. And so do take time to prioritize your relationships with your children and those around you. You know, this song, I'm sure you've probably all heard it, "The Cat's in the Cradle" by Harry Chapin. It'd be hard for me to read this without singing it, so I'll try not to sing it. But if you've ever listened to the words of it, it's haunting. He says, "My son turned 10 just the other day. He said, 'Thanks for the ball. Now, come on, let's play. Can you teach me to throw?' I said, 'Not today. I've got a lot to do.' He said, 'That's okay.' And he walked away and he smiled and he said, 'You know I'm going to be like you, Dad. You know I'm going to be like you. I've long since retired and my son's moved away. I called him up just the other day. I said, I'd like to see you if you don't mind. He said, I'd love to, Dad, if I could find the time. You see, my new job's a hassle and the kids have the flu. But it's sure nice talking to you, Dad. It's been real nice talking to you.' And as I hung up the phone, it occurred to me, he'd grown up just like me. My boy had grown up just like me. And I think, we've got to take advantage of the time as kids are little. And even when you're happy when they grow, when they end up with happy lives, it's still bittersweet to look back on that time. It's not going to do that. Sorry. Okay. Relationships and love are more important to God. Matthew 22:36-40, Jesus said that to love the Lord with all your heart, soul, and mind is the first and greatest commandment. And then the second is to love your neighbor as yourself. Well, who is your neighbor? Who's your neighbor? Well, all are my neighbors. My family's my neighbor. We are each other's neighbors. Ephesians 5 is all about relationships. And then 1 Peter 3 is all about relationships too. And when you get right down to it, your relationship with God will determine where you spend eternity. So relationships are very high on our priorities, I believe. It's not your job, your financial status, your relationship with your boss, your big kid toys, or how many preachers you know. None of that is what is going to determine where you spend eternity, but based upon your relationship with the Lord. How do we make the best use of our time? We choose our priorities carefully. Another time management tip is to plan ahead. Erin, my daughter-in-law, is the master list maker. she never forgets anything either. She's great at this. She makes lists. And I know that sometimes she writes things on the list that she can mark off that she's already done because she likes to mark things off. Sometimes I make a grocery store list and then I drive off and leave it at home. And then I don't want to turn around and get it because that just takes up more time. So I'll end up forgetting something. But Mom lives just, you know, stone's throw and I can borrow it from her. So make a list. And then I've talked to some people about this because this, again, is not, this whole subject is not something I'm great at. I'll just say that right here. I'm not great at it. But I talked to some people who are, and they talked about making a list and sitting down the night before you have somewhere to be, something to do, and you think to yourself, okay, what do I have to have done a month from now? What do I have to have done a week from now? What do I have to have done by tomorrow night? And then you start prioritizing and making things on your list that you need to do, and then mark them off. One of them also said that it's good to maybe if you have certain things to do around the house and a limited amount of time to do it, set the timer on your microwave. Say, I'm going to clean for an hour. Set the timer for an hour. When the hour is up, then you move on to your next task. So plan your days accordingly. This is a way you can manage your time. The Bible says that planning is wise. Proverbs 21:5 says, the plans of the diligent lead surely to abundance, but everyone who is hasty comes only to poverty. So financially, planning ahead is wise, but with our time, we can think of it that way as well. We should also count the cost of something that might take time and money. And Jesus was speaking of discipleship, related it to counting the cost in Luke 14. He says, which of you desiring to build a tower does not first sit down and count the cost, whether he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he's laid a foundation and is not able to finish, and all who see it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. So when we choose to spend our time on something, we need to decide if we have the time for it. You know, if we're going to put it, add another lesson, another extracurricular, another horseback riding, or another piano lesson, things like that. Let's consider if we have the time for it, and that's the best way to use our time. And then another time management tip is to get organized. And now, just be honest with yourself. I am pretty organized. I can say that. Fairly organized. But how much time do you spend looking for your lost keys? Or your lost phone? Or homework? Or do you spend a lot of time doing that? I won't ask for hands because then you might have to admit something. But if you get organized, then that eliminates the need to go searching around and rooting around for everything that you need before you can leave the house in the morning. And if your house is a wreck, then I think you'll waste a lot of time trying to find things. And you're also going to be reluctant to invite people into your home, which God wants us to do. He wants us to be hospitable. And then we'll be embarrassed when people stop by. And, you know, you can throw a lot of dirty dishes in the oven and in the dishwasher if you need to just clear the counter. But still, it's good to keep things organized at home. Bills. If you don't stay organized with your bills, it's easy for those to go unpaid. So it's important for us to stay organized. And like your mom always said, if you take time to do it right the first time, then you don't have to do it again. I say that a lot. If you take the time to do it right the first time, you won't have to do it again. I say that to Micah in his room. Then the last one, and what I think is very important, especially in this group that I imagine lots of preachers' wives, it doesn't seem like it goes together, but our time management needs to include time of being flexible and resting. We have to have time to rest. Sometimes we learn the hard way to rest because things happen. How many times has it happened that you got up and you planned your busy day? You know that first you're going to the grocery store, and then you have a Bible study, and then you have to make sure that you pick up somebody at noon, and then you hear that dreaded sound coming from the other room that sounds like, Mom, I threw up. And you know that the rest of your day is just not going to be the way that you thought it was going to be. It changes everything, doesn't it? So we have to learn to be flexible. Sometimes your child needs you. Sometimes he or she needs to have your undivided attention. And you may have had a lunch date, or you may have had something going on, but you need to put everything on hold and take your child. If you have them in school, take them out of school. Or if you've got lots of kids, take that one child and you know, make arrangements for your others and take that one and do something with them. We call it mommy days at our house. Sometimes they need that, and that's flexibility. I think of a family from Dripping Springs, Gary and Carol Heineman, who's, I just remember this one day, went to the doctor for something ordinary, and by 6 o'clock that night, they knew that their daughter had cancer. I think of my sister and brother-in-law who experienced something like this. Their lives changed in one day. You are going along thinking that things are a certain way, and then all of a sudden your life turns on a dime. And you have to learn flexibility, and there's a whole lot of other things you have to learn along with that, too. Maybe your husband throws a kink into your day when he wants to bring someone home and you for supper, and you weren't quite ready for it. And then there's other times, too, we need to be flexible. When God doesn't work on our timetable, when we want to do this right now, or we want something right now, and God says not right now. You know, when it's not easy or fun to learn flexibility, we have to remember what is most important in life and to count our blessings. James 1, verses 2 through 4 says, "Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness or patience. And let patience have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing." Something interesting that I read, and I never heard it put this way, that we have to leave room for margin. And margin I'd ever heard of that was the edges of the page, so I never thought of it quite this way. But the way they described it is that margin is the space between your load and your limit. And I kind of thought of it, you ever seen a movie where someone's car goes into the water and there's, you know, it's starting to sink and there's a little bit of air at the top and they're holding their nose into that little air pocket. Sometimes I think we live that way. We live where we feel like we're sinking and we just have this much space, and as long as we can keep our nose in that air bubble, it's okay. But that's not good for us. It's not physically good for us. Margin is having breath at the top of the staircase, having money at the end of the month. That's hard sometimes, isn't it? It's having sanity left at the end of each day. That's margin. We all need it. It's important not to pack our lives so full that we explode or that we burn out or that we grow resentful. And this can happen very easily with our husbands, too. My husband packs the day so full. But this is where I know he struggles with it, and a lot of you do as well. How do you say, "No, I can't help you"? How do you say, "No, I can't help you"? And I believe that when you're really willing, that God is going to use you, and he'll not leave you, and he's going to help you in these areas. Turn and look at Galatians 6. Verses 7 through 10 says, "Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever one sows, that will he also reap. For the one who sows to his own flesh will from the flesh reap corruption. But the one who sows to the Spirit will from the Spirit reap eternal life. Let us not grow weary of doing good, for in due season we will reap if we do not give up. So then, as we have opportunity, let us do good to everyone, and especially to those who are the household of faith." And I feel a little bit like I'm backtracking and saying, don't cram your lives too full. But on the other hand, be willing to be used at the same time, but be careful not to stretch it so far. Psalm 121, Mom read that yesterday, and I thought that was very fitting for this as well. And yesterday when she said 121, I looked at chapter 1, verse 21. I was like, that's not what I think she said. But Psalm 121 says, "I lift up my eyes to the hills. From where does my help come? My help comes from the Lord, who made heaven and earth. He will not let your foot be moved. He who keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is your keeper. The Lord is your shade on your right hand. The sun shall not strike you by day and the moon by night. The Lord will keep you from all evil, but he will keep your life. The Lord will keep your going out and your coming in from this time forth and forevermore." So let's be careful not to pack it so full that we just are ready to explode, but let's also be confident that God is going to provide the strength that we need in order to take care of his people, which we're called to do. You know, we want so badly to use our time wisely and to use our time for God, but we've got to have downtime. And think about this. Race cars need pit stops because you can't fix a race car going 200 miles an hour. If you're moving 200 miles an hour, something's going to break and you can't fix it unless you stop and fix it. Nature, land, needs time to lay fallow, doesn't it? And God left a day of rest after He created the world. He built into our bodies a need for sleep, and our minds need time to recuperate. How many times have you seen someone whose life is packed so full that they are impacted by maybe a stroke or a heart attack because they did not slow down enough? Let's think about those things and know, don't let ourselves or our husbands reach that point if we can help it. And my thought was great too. Leaving room for margin means that we have more peace because our minds have had time to rest and declutter. So if we have time to rest, then we're more at peace. We also have better health. Have any of you ever watched that Amazing Race on TV? We watched it one season because we had a friend who had a friend that knew someone that was in it. And I could not ever do that because my heart pounds the whole time. They're racing from one place to another, and we're talking about from continent to continent, and they're trying to beat each other. I could not live that way. I couldn't live with blood pressure elevated like that, trying to win, trying to beat someone. And I think sometimes we live that way, racing from place to place. But we need to have better health, and slowing down and resting our minds will help us have better health. We have stronger relationships when we leave room for this margin because we've made them a priority. John and I spend Mondays together, and sometimes I feel a little bit bad because I insist on it, and he enjoys it too, but I think if I didn't, then he would go on and do other things that need to be done, and then his mind would just be filled and filled. But we enjoy a stronger relationship because we make priority. We spend Mondays together. And then resting also, and leaving room for margin, means that we're more useful in our ministry because we aren't used up. When we relax and rest, and when we come to places like this, and I think, Wayne and Shanna Kay and Troy, Trent and Lisa, that probably happens a lot, doesn't it? Y'all are providing this for us, and so you're not resting and relaxing, but you're providing it for so many of these people who need time and mental relaxation and growth and filling their cups. So we appreciate that and hope that you get that too sometime. But it's difficult to think sometimes of managing our time with regards to relaxing, but we've got to do it. We have to do it. We have to have it because God made us that way. So let's thank God for the time that we have, and let's be careful with it. Prioritize and plan and organize and rest. Those are the things that I think we should remember. And thank you for your time.